Call her Nadia. Her parents did. She never once dreamt of lions, but there was a time, as a colourless childhood advanced into benighted adolescence, when foreign candy and shortwave radio seemed the stuff of dreams. She and her elder sister Nastya, and Nastya's friends Ida and Jan, collected the candy wrappers. Their rainbow colours had no parallel in the blocks of crumbling tenements that looked like sullied wedding cakes, picked over by all and sundry hands in an atmosphere of sweat, smoke, secrecy, and dubious libations. Hunger sated briefly. That was a wedding party. Jan styled himself Johnny. He was the one with the shortwave radio, which he had put together in a shed on a country road somewhere, from parts he scrounged on his truant expeditions by commuter rail. He was pleased to lecture the youngest, Nadia, on the workings of the device and the role of the ionosphere in shortwave propagation. Nastya and Ida were more excited by Johnny's plan to resurrect a motorcycle he had hauled from a bog. Lecturing Nadia was one thing, but Johnny was not one for chit-chat. Nastya never got much out of him when she gushed about the man he would be. An engineer, a scientist, a cosmonaut, a radio anchor, a motorcyclist adventurer.
I'm nobody's worker and nobody's hero, Johnny scoffed at Nastya one time.
Ida took a different tack. One summer, day after day, she voiced a daydream about finding a new place to go, instead of the shed in nobody's hayfield, a beach between nobody's forest and nobody's sea. On the high sand dunes, even higher pine trees would give them shade, and the breeze would fill their lungs with salt and pine as it rolled the water and the branches and the sand. They could be just happy, just us. In such a singular landscape of straight and waving forms.
A change could be good, even Johnny admitted at last. The motorcycle was not starting. It had not started since their grandparents went to war. He had sweat in his eyes, greasy gashes on his hands. He stank unbearably, even to himself, and he was beginning to imagine that the shed was being watched.
Anyway, the hayfield had become infested with ticks that year, so Nastya and Nadia were ready to support a change. As if she had already chosen the spot from a library of survey photographs, Ida led them all to it the following day. It was far. They had only 2 hours of late afternoon to enjoy there, but they agreed it would be a fine place to return.
If only we could camp for a night or two and spend the whole day.
Ida sighed, and by then, all four were living in a daydream. A youth event in a father town afforded a pretext to be away. Johnny used connections to falsify their attendance. On the first evening, around their campfire on the beach, they experimented with lightly roasting a few foreign candy bars in their precious wrappers. This had been Nadia's idea. She had emptied her secret stash, and she was proud to make this contribution to the illicit party. They laughed like mad as they tried to lick molten chocolate from the singed rainbow foil. Nastya passed around a bottle of Vanna Tallinn rum liqueur.
Not for you, little hedgehog, she said to Nadia.
They climbed the dunes to watch the sunset. At the last light, Ida said,
I'm going down again. I need a moment.
She went walking east, her feet straddling the tide line in a kind of dance. As she got farther, Johnny reached into his pack for something else he had scrounged, a pair of large binoculars.
What's she doing? Johnny crowed.
Even without binoculars, it was plain enough that Ida was stripping, tossing her clothes to the wind, and then wading out into the surf. Johnny's optics just gave him the best view.
Stop that, Nastya said.
Why? Asked Johnny. I'll share if that's the problem. Here, look.